is that to be excluded from consideration? It would seem to me that the policy we have been pursuing of allying ourselves with democratic forces in Western Germany produces a position of strength geographically, which nothing the Soviet can do to the East Germans could weaken. Deplore it, as I very much do, that anybody is involuntarily under the rule of the Soviet.
Yes, that would mean only that you would say as long as the present situation stands and continues, the Western powers cannot leave Western Germany to any power or opposed power. That is all right, whether you do it with German forces or with the powers of and forces of Western Europe and the Western world. That's just the same. The balance of power will not be changed by taking in Western German forces on the one side and labor forces from Eastern Germany to the other side.
But is there any alternative other than just submitting to Russia's program and the things that she wants to do? Suppose Russia is bent upon stepping out and increasing her control over the world. We can't stop it by...
Yes.
Anything short of the same methods that she is using.
Yes, sir. In the beginning of our talk, you spoke of two possibilities as to Russia. That Russia is following an imperialistic line, or the other one, that Russia is only seeking defense and peace for herself. I think there is a third possibility, and I firmly believe that the third possibility confers with the reality of the situation. That is, Russia is following as a promoter of world revolution, the program of communist world revolution, but the means by which Russia tries to follow up this and to realize this world revolution is not the means of a third world war, of any aggression in a military sense, but of an aggression there where a civic war can be started, where the difficulties of the economic crises arise and such like things. And I think we have to think much more in the Western world of these possibilities and necessities which arise from this point of view than of the merely strategical and military aspect of the situation.
Hasn't Russia's program been one of revolution and one of force?
Mm-hmm.
And haven't we experienced that not only in our own country but seen it in operation in other parts of the world? And if that is the case, how can we move in any other basis until we're at least in a position that we can neutralize that?
Yes, what I would say on that is this. We, no more than the Russians, want war.
Mm-hmm.
But we are faced with both an ideological situation and also an enormous development of armed strength in Russia. And we can say, and we mean, that we don't want war. But we think that the only way we can avoid that war is to be strong enough to defend ourselves in positions that are strong so that the Soviet Union would never be tempted to go further than it might do in the way of stirring up trouble internally in other countries. We never want to put ourselves in a position where she might be tempted to say, well, we can back up our development of internecine troubles in those countries with an armed stroke, such as has happened in other parts of the world.
I would like to say that I share Pastor Niemöller's view that I do not think that the Russians are planning to use military strength as their principal weapon in world conquest. But it nevertheless has a moral effect upon the populations which it is trying to intimidate in other ways. And Russia will not use it as long as she is being successful with other weapons. Once those other weapons fail, and in failing, we find that the Russian regime itself begins to suffer internal revolution. I'm not so sure, but that what at that time Russia may find that a military conquest is the only means of uniting her people and keeping control. That was, after all, Mussolini's program, and he got to a certain point. He found that he had to have war in order to maintain his power and to maintain his program.
Yes, it's very difficult to me to answer to this question insofar as I am convinced that any parallel between Mussolini and Hitler on the one side working with individualistic nations with the situation of Russia is out of the question. I don't think that that Russia ever will have to make war to postpone an inner revolution. That is a special Western type of policy and of a last step of policy to sustain a regime or a system or, and so on. I cannot imagine how this could refer to the Russian situation in any nearer future which we can see and judge about. I think that Russia is really afraid only as for world revolution from one possibility, namely that the Western world will prove that it is able to put a better social, economic, political system over against the communist system, which up to now to the underdeveloped countries is recommended as the only means of bringing about a better world.
Yes, well, this is very, very good and very honorable. There are two difficulties that always strike me. One is whether it is ever possible for the free world to compete with the promises of the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union does not have to produce in these other parts of the world. It only has to disturb and destroy. The second thing is, how long do you think it will take until you could so improve the situation of all these other countries in the world for it to be a tenable rival to the pretensions of the Soviet Union before the level of politics, society, and economic welfare could be raised? Raised to that point where it's so convincing and obvious. This must take, I can tell you as an economist, 15, 20, 30 years of the hardest effort, even in peacetime. Mm. So we have a real problem of dealing with that 30 years. So what worries me is that as a pious man, and putting myself really in the position of Christians in a Christian country, here we are with a dilemma. We want to come to the rescue of people who ought not to be forced into servitude. We find ourselves with our hands entangled in the weapons of war. And here is the dilemma of a Christian. What can a Christian do?
Well, I would answer this. I think that the problem that you have pointed up is one which we have not yet recognized in this country. And that is that it is primarily a problem of leadership in these other countries. No matter how extensive we have point four programs and other economic aid, if it does not go into the hands of people who themselves can create the wealth and the better way of life for the people within those countries, we will have created something that is only temporary. Whatever we can give to those countries themselves will not be of any great weight, but where we can help them to develop the leadership, which in turn will permit them to create a new and a better system, they will find through our system something much better than Russia can give.
What we can do and what we ought to do is something in the social, political line. And if you say that it will take 15 years, 20 years, even in peacetime, yes, I should say then we must begin today and not tomorrow, because no other means will really and in the long run work. In the meantime, certainly I shall not oppose that the Western world tries to build a wall of security for itself, not to be overcome by any possibilities. On the other hand, I do not know whether or not the fear on both sides really becomes more and more dangerous the longer this present state of affairs is carried on.
What's your conclusion, Nuveen?
Well, as I see the dilemma that with which we are faced, Pastor Niemöller brings out the opinion and the observation that Russia is faced with very much of the same picture that we are faced. Here we are both fearing each other and unable to recognize a way in which we might start to create confidence instead of distrust. And if we can find some method by which we can approach the problem and create a Christian solution that will offer to the peoples not only within Germany, but in Russia, in the Western nations, but in the other nations that are today the targets of Russian and Western propaganda, then we might be able to find a solution that would bring us toward peace.
My own hope lies in the passage of time, in the realization by both sides, the East and the West, that their strength is such that it cannot be overcome by the other side, that therefore, even if it should be without negotiation, there would come about some pacification of heart and mind. And, of course, we will do everything we can throughout the world to raise the position of those countries whose standards of living are low and whose methods have been those of colonialism and domination. But at the same time, if we're looking at present policy, it would seem to me that it is Germany's best option to be a good neighbor with the nations of the North Atlantic community and to exercise her influence there, a great and philosophic influence so far as reason may go.
As we have to be good neighbors for the nations of the Atlantic Pact, we at the same time never will be able to dispensate ourselves to come to a modus vivendi with a neighbor in the East also, because on this, having neighbors on both sides with whom we can get along one way or the other, with more or less friendship, but anyhow without real strife and combat, therefore depends the well-being of 66 or 68 million German people, not only, but certainly of all those people who have to live between the times as well as between the spaces of West and East.
Taking part in today's University of Chicago Roundtable were Pastor Martin Niemöller, president of the Evangelical Church of Hesse and Nassau, Germany, John Novine, investment banker and president of the Chicago Sunday Evening Club, and Herman Feiner, political scientist of the University of Chicago. Send 10 cents in coin for a pamphlet of today's roundtable to the University of Chicago Roundtable, Chicago 37, Illinois. For 30 cents, you may receive today's pamphlet together with the last two roundtable pamphlets presenting first-hand reports of the present situation inside Russia. These three pamphlets make a unique packet of unusual material on the Soviet Union today. A full year subscription to the roundtable pamphlet costs $3. Next week, the roundtable presents Chancellor Lawrence A. Kempton in a discussion of humanities and higher education. Today's partially transcribed roundtable was a public service presentation by NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.